morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Dana Nelson on behalf of Sheldon Martin. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, if I may, please. The issue in this case is whether the Court's exclusion of evidence violated Mr. Martin's right to present a defense or defend against the State's allegations. Specifically, we're talking about a polygraph exam that he passed as a basis for his expert's opinion that he did not qualify as a pedophile. The general rule in Washington is that absent a stipulation of the parties, polygraph evidence is not admissible. However, as the state notes in its briefing, there are exceptions to that rule, and those exceptions have been discussed in the cases of Ray and Sutherland. And the case most on point with this one is this court's decision in Ray. And in that case, a medical examiner was allowed to testify to a polygraph as a basis for his opinion that the decedent's death was suicide. Basically, the husband of the wife passed a polygraph, and that was one of the factors that the medical examiner took into consideration when he determined that the cause of death was suicide. And in affirming the admission of that evidence, this court noted that the evidence was directly relevant, not to a witness's testimony that they were telling the truth, but to the thoroughness and completeness of the expert's opinion. And therefore, not only was it relevant, but its prejudicial effect was negligible, considering its limited purpose and also the limiting instruction that the court gave. Similarly here, this court's analysis in Ray, supports admitting the evidence here. It wasn't offered to show that Mr. Martin was telling the truth when he answered he was not sexually attracted to children. It was offered to support the expert's opinion that he did not qualify as a pedophile. And significantly, even the AG below acknowledged that these tests have relevance apart from their reliability. Specifically, the value in the test, according to the expert, is not the results, but the fact that the person taking them believes in their reliability, and therefore they have a trend to be more candid with the evaluator. So they are an important part of the evaluation process. Similarly, the admission of polygraphs was addressed in Sutherland, and the Supreme Court there said generally should not be admissible unless relevant and also unmistakably not prejudicial. And there a detective had testified that the other suspect in the case had taken 2 lie detector tests. And it was clearly prejudicial because it was basically the officer's opinion that the other guy was telling the truth, and therefore the defendant must be guilty. And here we don't have that same concern. The only prejudice we're concerned with here is the danger that the jury might use the evidence in a manner that the court has not allowed. But that's where the limiting instruction comes into play. And this court noted in Ray that when a limiting instruction is given, the prejudice is negligible, and also juries are presumed to follow those instructions. And here, one of the reasons the court excluded the evidence was its belief that the jury wouldn't follow its instruction that it was admissible only on the expert's opinion. And that was an untenable basis, even under an ER 403 analysis, to deny the admission of the evidence. I'd like to address the question of whether this is constitutional error or evidentiary error, as the state argues in its brief. Basically, what the courts have looked at is the interest of the defendant in bringing forth this evidence. And obviously, the higher the interest, the more it touches on constitutional concerns. In the cases where the courts have found no constitutional issue by excluding the evidence in Waters and Schaefer, the court noticed that the evidence had negligible value. For instance, in Waters, the theory of a government conspiracy was speculative. And in Schaefer, the court found that the defendant still got to testify as to his version of events. He just didn't get to admit a stamp of approval of his version based on a machine. But here we have a different case because the importance of this evidence was is significant.
Well, it's only significant if it's believed by the if it's capable of being believed by the trier of fact to have been true. And since your theory is that you're seeking to introduce this evidence not for the truth of the results of the polygraph, then doesn't this fall into the category of things that are merely negligible? They just support other evidence that's otherwise in the case.
I would say no, Your Honor, and that's because this case boiled down to a battle of the experts in which expert the jury would believe. And without any objective evidence for Dr. Manley to rely on in formulating his opinion.
So the jury would have to believe. So you were introducing it for the truth of its assertion.
No, Your Honor, we were not.
If the jury didn't believe it was true, then they wouldn't believe Dr. Manley.
I disagree, Your Honor. It shows some objectivity in his evaluation, the fact that he was subjecting the defendant to some objective testing. And it's important because here there was no availability of a PPG because of the testosterone.
So it isn't evidence. It is not evidence on an important question. It's evidence that supports other evidence on an important question. Right.
It's evidence.
Doesn't that make it negligible under the cases that you discussed?
Not in this case, Your Honor, where the whole defense case was a matter of the expert's opinion. And by excluding this evidence, the court stripped the expert's opinion of any credibility or objectivity in front of the jury. It looks like he was just a hired gun who would testify to anything without any objective testing. It's especially prejudicial in light of the fact that...
Is the rule true for the gander also, that Dr. Phoenix gets to come in these proceedings and testify that she gave polygraphs to committees and they failed them, and it was based on their failure of the polygraph that Dr. Phoenix finds that these people are predatory?
Your Honor, I don't think there's a slippery slope here, and that's because...
I don't think it's a slippery slope. I'm just asking...
If the door is open...
Is it good for the gander on this?
I think in the typical case, this evidence isn't going to be as relevant as it was in this case. This was an unusual case in that the PPG was not available in order for Manley to base an opinion on about Mr. Martin's current mindset. This was the only objective test available at the time. And, Your Honor, the state doesn't have constitutional...
Characterizing it as an objective test begs the question as to why we don't admit polygraph results. So your characterization is it really doesn't help your argument much. The problem here may well have been defense counsel's failure to lay an adequate foundation as to what he wanted this admitted for. And yes, if the expert's going to testify that in their experience, blah, 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 people tend to tell the truth when they're taking polygraphs, that may beg the question. Again, it's how people testify and how it's offered. And I don't think the record here supports good argument on appeal with regard to how this came up. It didn't. Nobody helped the trial court out.
Your Honor, if I may take a minute of my rebuttal time. There was a point where the defense asked, well, may I just ask the expert if these questions were answered during a polygraph without giving the results? And the court said no to that as well. And the defense theory was it just would show that Manley was doing a competent job in evaluating Sheldon Martin, and would give the jury it would give his opinion more persuasive value with the jury had the defense counsel been allowed to do that. And it begs the question, Your Honor, because the obvious inference is that the results that he passed. But Your Honors,
so he would be
court,
total hired gun. Yeah.
But Your Honors, this court did admit similar evidence in the Ray case and found, and I would say it should be admitted even more so in this case where the defendant's liberty interests are at stake.
Well, if we had a record where counsel said, I want to demonstrate, as in Ray, the thoroughness of the examination on the part of my expert, and then the court could have crafted an approach to this through instructions that may have prevented the jury from doing this sort of double truth to truth. And that's what didn't happen here, counsel. Now, whether or not it's a failure that amounts to ineffective assistance, and I hesitate to say these things, you're going to turn it all around on me, and 6 months from now you're back here on that one. I don't know, but it that's the difficulty. The record isn't made, so how can we get in an array it seems to have been?
Well, Your Honor, the defense did try to get this in multiple times, even during the direct of Manley before the direct was over. Defense counsel started to ask, you know, was there any testing done, and the prosecutor objected, and there was a sidebar, and defense explained that this was stripping its witness of all credibility or appearance of objectivity. So we would argue that there is a sufficient basis on the record for this court to find that Mr. Martin's due process right to defend was violated.
We'll call it 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Malcolm Ross, representing the state. I request that the Court affirm the order civilly committing Mr. Martin as a sexually violent predator. This is an abuse of discretion standard that applies here. The trial court had tenable reasons. So I will talk first about the distinguishing it as admissible as evidence that an expert relied upon, because counsel is correct. And particularly in these cases, experts do talk about a lot of information that they don't know firsthand. They talk about statements that witnesses made. They talk about things that police reports say. And that is technically hearsay, but it is no longer hearsay when it comes in because it's being offered for the limited purpose of evaluating the expert's opinion. So it's not offered for the truth of the matter asserted, and it no longer has the danger that hearsay has. And it has a limiting instruction that tells the jury to limit its use. This is completely different because there is no way to cure the unreliability of the polygraph. And we have the recent Hawkins case, which is a sexually violent predator case, where a trial court ordered a polygraph test of Mr. Hawkins, and our Supreme Court overturned that order, saying that the legislature did not appear to intend that that be a part of an initial evaluation. And probably because they allowed for it in post-commitment proceedings, but they did not put it in the pre-commitment section. And the court reasoned that this was likely because of their knowledge, the legislature's knowledge, that the polygraph is unreliable. And Hawkins recited the history of unreliability of the polygraph. Just a little while after Hawkins came out in 2012, the legislature amended the statute, RCW 7109050, to specifically give courts the ability to order polygraphs as well as other types of testing, indicated that it always intended that they have that ability. Nothing that I say here today,
So why shouldn't the defense expert be allowed to testify that, or the respondent's expert be allowed to testify that his inquiry was consistent with the inquiry envisioned by the legislature, in that it also consisted of administering a polygraph?
Because it violates FRI, because then he's using the instrument to show whether or not Mr. Martin was telling the truth. And it is only relevant.
Well, no. What I just described is he's offering it, that it's offered for the truth of this assertion. I did my analysis just like the legislature wants. That's the assertion that it's offered for the truth of.
Yes, and that was permitted in the Ray case, because the issue in the Ray case was whether the coroner had done his job thoroughly. The suspect husband of the wife who had been ruled to have committed suicide was not even involved in the proceedings.
Yeah, but why isn't it a material issue? Why isn't it a material question whether the defense expert behaved consistent with the legislature's envisioning of how these evaluations will be conducted?
Because I believe the envision is to use it as an investigative tool. It does promote fuller disclosure.
So why can't he say he used it as an investigative tool? And it promoted his fuller discussion and evaluation of the respondent.
Because that communicates the result. There's a difference between an expert relying on things. Experts can rely on a broader range of
things.
There's
a lot of things that come in trials that under experts testifying under 702 that communicate the results. And I would venture this. Everything communicates the result, because if an expert is saying these are the things I relied on, he's not typically saying and they would have led a different person to a different conclusion. He's saying they would have led a reasonable person to my conclusion. So your attempt to distinguish this distinguishes away everything that's admitted as the basis for an expert's conclusion.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. There is a difference here because it doesn't meet the Frye test. It's not accepted in its field as determining
whether it's not being offered as substantive evidence. Does it matter if it meets the Frye test?
But the jury, the danger is the jury is going to interpret it as indicating
that's
whether or
subject
not
to an instruction from the court, isn't it? There's a lot of things that come in at trial that the courts have to instruct the jury the nature of their contemplation of that fact.
The question, though, is whether the trial court abused its discretion. And you see there are many courts that have excluded polygraph results based on ER 702 because of its unreliability and ER 403 because of the danger that the jury will believe that it shows Mr. Martin as being truthful.
Clearly, if it's offered appropriately, as Judge Dwyer is intimating in his questions, as a diagnostic tool, something that is now recognized by the legislature, then you're going to get recognition that if the proper foundation is laid and a proper argument made in the trial court, that it is not offered for the truth of it, but rather that I use this tool in making my determination based on a number of factors, this one included, that the defendant, for want of a better word, is telling the truth about his lack of being attracted to children is perfectly acceptable, because now you can have limiting instructions, now you can craft it. So it turns, seems to me that after the amendments to 7109, that the reasoning of Ray may be applicable here depending on how it was offered.
I disagree, and in particular because Ray was simply about whether the government, the sole question was whether
thoroughness.
The government had
thoroughness.
Done its thoroughness.
This is simply, we could go back and do it over. I'd offer it this way. I'd say this is simply to reflect that the expert did everything possible to be objective in his evaluation of whatever Mr. Martin's statements, period. End of statement. That's what it's offered for. Now the trial court would have to say, oh, it's inherently unreliable for that purpose. Well, after 7109, you can't say that. So the legislature has chiseled away at this broad argument that you can't get it in, to say nothing about what Ray did. This has become a rather interesting and nuanced issue.
Your Honor,
I have my interest.
In Ray, the issue was the thoroughness of the investigation. That's what the jury had to decide. In this case, the question is, does Mr. Martin suffer from a mental abnormality? And the primary abnormality was pedophilia. So it goes directly to a primary issue in which he is a party involved.
That's only a question of how it's offered.
But that distinguishes the Ray case from this case.
So it's really the case of the record in this case is what you're arguing.
Pardon me, sir?
You're really only arguing it's how it's offered in this case.
Well, I think that there is no other example you can show where something does not meet the Frye test and it's being offered subject to a limiting instruction and the jury's being asked to use it, basically accepting the purpose for which it has been found unreliable, but to disregard that fact.
That all depends on how your expert testifies.
I think you want to be real careful about asking for that head note, because there are a whole lot of things in the biotech world where the precise procedure that the person engaging in this study is involved in would not meet Frye, but the different components when put together with other things is acceptable enough for them to be moving forward with peer review. So I don't know that distinction is one that you're going to see us trying to weigh into, because there's a whole lot of other dangers with that.
If I bring it back to the question...
That just comes back to truth of the matter asserted.
If I bring it back to the question whether the trial court abused its discretion, clearly the trial court had tenable reasons, and it put them on the record. The trial court was concerned that the jury would take this information and decide that it meant that the evidence showed Mr. Martin was telling the truth. And we have plenty of authority that shows that it can be excluded for that reason, and the trial court made an excellent record for that. Now, even if you get to the point where you want to decide whether it was harmful and it affected the result, you've got to recognize that Mr. Martin, first of all, in his deposition said, I do suffer from pedophilia. He's been through years of treatment. He recognizes his own condition. He said that he still has trouble being aroused to children. He has to be careful. He has to turn the TV channel. And then Dr. Manley, on cross-examination, you don't see this very often, but he changed his opinion. He said that Mr. Martin was a situational child molester. He just did it because there was an opportunity, and he doesn't suffer from these serious fantasies and urges that make him do it. He changed that opinion, and he said, okay, based on what you're saying, he did have pedophilia in 1992. And then we pressed him further, and then he said, okay, based on what you're telling me now, because he wasn't aware of the record, he did have urges and fantasies in his 40s from about 2007 to 2009, somewhere in there. So he completely changed his opinion. So the idea that this case turned at all on the ability...
Well, then this is interesting. So he changed his opinion because he wasn't sufficiently aware of the record, which seems to indicate that he changed his opinion because he hadn't done a proper workup, which seems to make more relevant than it was before those things that he actually did do in order to reach his opinion.
He wasn't familiar with the record. He also never testified about the pedophilia criteria. It was his first trial testifying as a defense expert in this case.
And
he fell apart on cross-examination. His credibility could not have been rehabilitated by a polygraph result. Thank you.
Counsel, you've got 2 minutes, and I warn you that Judge Gross has become interested in the discussion.
Okay. Well, thank you, Your Honor. Assuming we have the sufficient record here, I'd like to address a few of the prosecutor's points. Number one, polygraph evidence doesn't violate Fry any more than a PPG when it's offered under ER 703 because it's not offered as scientific evidence but as a basis for the expert's opinion. And the only limitation on that is whether it's generally accepted by others in the same field. And here we met that standard. Second, the Attorney General makes a distinction between the danger of hearsay evidence and polygraph evidence as a basis for the expert's opinion. I don't see any difference. Hearsay has the same danger of being used for an improper purpose. Here, Dr. Phoenix was allowed to testify to some pretty damaging stuff about statements people made about Mr. Martin in sex offender treatment group several years ago. And the court found that a limiting instruction was sufficient to cure any prejudice or sufficient to make sure that the jury used that evidence for the proper purpose.
Is there a record as to whether or not the respondent took a polygraph with regard to Dr. Phoenix's inquiry?
He did not, Your Honor.
Okay.
Regarding the record, I will just point out that the defense did specifically move to admit this under ER 703. So the rule was there before the court to evaluate whether it would whether it should be admissible as one of the factors making up Dr. Manley's decision, and the court denied it under ER 403. And even under the abuse of discretion standard, we argue that the court abused its discretion because it basically presumed that the jury wouldn't follow its instruction to limit the evidence. And finally, regarding prejudice, that cross-examination, I wasn't there, but it's the jury's job to evaluate the evidence, and the jury might have well thought that the prosecutor was browbeating Dr. Manley and purposely trying to trip him up. Who knows what the jury walked away with from that cross-examination? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Next up, Feldman.